You're listening to Fancy a Brew Podcast with Aaron and Lucy. Email us on fancyabrewpod@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. Just search for Fancy a Brew Pod.
Hello and welcome to Fancy a Brew. My name's Lucy and I'm with my friend Aaron. We're here in Aaron's beautiful flat.
I apologise for that again.
Again?
Because
again.
We were supposed to record in your wonderful house.
Oh, thank you.
But I arrived a little late in the evening and we were both tired and hungry.
We were starving, weren't we?
Instead, I sat babysitting a cat while you and your husband... you helped your husband cook the dinner, which is very nice.
I do my usual thing of Jack starts it and then I've... saunter in at the end and dish it up and make it like I've done it all.
I like your style.
It's a good trick for anybody who...
It's definitely not a tick though.
It's definitely not a tick. I need to put my teeth in. So this time we're going to talk about Faye's wedding.
Yes.
We're going to talk about getting old. I've got a bit of news and we're going to get a little band update from Aaron.
We are, yes. The band's back together. The lame joke that you kept saying before. I thought I'd preempt it so you didn't say that at some point later on.
Oh, I was belted for that. And also, we will finish off every podcast, like we always do, with something that we learnt since the last time.
Indeed.
So
where should we begin? Should we begin at the beginning?
Let's begin at the beginning.
Yeah. So this weekend just gone, as we're recording this, I went to Yorkshire.
Back up north
to my sister's wedding, which was amazing. It was lovely. It was beautiful. It was such a wonderful day. And it was nice to see my sister not stressed for a little bit.
Yeah.
And see how much in love they are, because they really are just like besotted with each other. It's proper geeky, but beautiful to see. Aww. Lovely. And they're both the same. The card I got them was, "I'm glad you two weirdos found each other." And it's really funny because every wedding card they got was, everybody inside had written, "I'm so glad you weirdos had found each other." And
you just put it on the front.
Yeah. And so my sister's husband's sister, my sister-in-law, so she's gay. And so she was the best person.
Oh, wow.
And me as the gay brother, I was the person of honour.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is quite nice. So she said, again in her speech, "You two are the same type of weird." So I think they've got the hint now that everybody thinks they're both a bit weird.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so amazing.
They were telling this story that during the... When Faye and Lewis first met, they went out on a walk, which was like a prearranged walk with the church that my mum's in. And they met each other and Lewis is absolutely my sister's type. He's got long hair. Mm. He's part Italian. So he's got like, you know, this kind of Mediterranean look about him. He's, you know, got a bit of a caveman style, which is my sister's type of man. And she apparently she was... he made this sandwich that he was really proud of. Something that was the first time he'd made a sandwich ever. And he was only 19.
I was going to say, how old is he?
And he
was 25.
Apparently, his chat up line to her at the end of this day was, "Do you want to come and look at my sandwich?" Which is, and I'd either forgotten about the story or in my old man style, just completely forgotten or hadn't been told before. So I thought that was quite funny at the wedding, yeah.
I love that.
It was just a really, really lovely day. They arrived in a tuk-tuk.
Oh.
Yeah, and then they had the ceremony in Victoria Hall in Saltaire, which was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. My sister designed everything. She's really creative. Mm. And it was just, it was nice. Obviously, I had to deal with a few... A few family issues, as we all know. If you've heard the pods, go back and listen before we get to this point, and then you'll see this is like the... This is like the end of season episode, you know, like where everything comes to head.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except it isn't for us. This is just my life story. So it was disappointing that my mum didn't speak to me at all at the wedding. She ignored me and she was sat, you know, one person away from me all day, which was a bit disappointing that she couldn't just apologise. But you know, if that's her decision, that's her decision. I can't change.
Well, that's it.
I can't change the way she is. So no. I'm just glad my sister had her an absolutely amazing day with Lewis. He was just perfect for her.
Oh, they looked amazing.
Oh,
that picture that you sent me of her dress and Lewis in his suit—they just. She's so, like, it's so quirky, but, like, it just really worked, and the venue looked beautiful, and, like you said, she's super creative, and all the pictures that you showed me of, like, the play settings and the donut wall, and all stuff that she'd made herself from scratch. I mean, I thought I'd done a little bit of stuff of mine, but nothing to that level, and I think that's incredible.
She is amazing. I mean, she doesn't... What's quite humbling about her is she doesn't realize how good she is, especially this kind of thing. So it was nice that when we went to go pick up the stuff the day after the wedding planner from the venue said, oh, one of the other brides had looked round on the morning of, or the morning before your wedding, before you all came in, and she wants to buy everything. So if that doesn't tell her that she's good at this kind of thing, then perhaps... she needs a kick up the arse, as it were. And I will be the one to do that.
Yeah, that's it. That's what Big Brothers are for. Yes,
exactly. Although it was quite difficult at the end of the wedding, having to come back and kind of realising that I'm missing out on a lot of stuff to do with family. But I would never have the opportunities up there that I have down here or, you know, my own place. Good salary, big team, you know, I wouldn't have any of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't drive, so London's easy. But still, leaving, it was a bit like everybody's moved on with their lives, and it was just a bit difficult to deal with when I was coming back. I was a bit sad when I came back, if I'm honest. It was
I think sometimes you feel a bit like your life's going at 100 miles an hour here, for example. Maybe one feels like. Your life, you know, in the big city, you never stop. City never sleeps and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then you go home and actually things change there too.
Yeah.
But in your mind, you think it's going to be exactly the same.
Yeah, I suppose you don't think of it that way. Yeah. It's quite interesting, isn't it?
That happened to us before we moved back. I mean, I don't really go back to Middlesbrough as often as, you know. Well, no, I go back fairly often, but I think I wouldn't. I only go back now because I can.
And it's closer to when you were living in London.
And it's closer, so
when
we moved to Leeds, it's, you know, an hour and 20 minutes from my lot, it's an hour and 40 minutes from Jack's lot, pretty, you know, central.
Yeah.
And, but when we lived here, we used to take, like, annual leave to go home and see our families, whereas, you know, now I could just pop back on an evening if I wanted to. Yeah.
But I also think people forget when they come here that you're not on annual leave.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's that. It's the set because, you know, I'll go home and because my mum's got an illness, she can't work. But, you know, Jack's parents are sort of semi-retired, so they're working. But their life doesn't stop just because I've come back.
Yeah, yeah.
So often when they come to see you, it's like, right then, what are we doing? And you're like, yeah. I've got to go to work.
Yeah, I'll see you in 12 hours in my case.
I'll
see you after the sun's gone down.
Yeah.
So. So I think sometimes people forget that you're not just playing at London.
Yeah.
You're actually living here, which can be, you know, and as you say, time moves on and people move on and, you know, just seeing like my brother is so grey, you know, and
that picture that you put on your Instagram the TV, I was like, wow. And you look now, especially
as we've got older, we look. I think now I've lost a bit of weight as well.
I was going to say,
we look quite similar.
You look a lot more similar than I first thought that you two did.
Yes, yeah, and I noticed that in the picture that we posted together.
Yeah,
but I suppose he's got two kids. You know, Millie's 6, Alfie's almost 1. You know, he's going to be 40 in a couple of years. You know, you forget about all this stuff and. You know, I made quite a few quips that my hair's getting thinner, but my hair's got thinner recently because
I've got a lot of stress.
And it stops certain nutrients getting into my system. But then I was like, you know, sorry, I'm just for men. You're looking a bit grey, brother.
Oh, let me tell you a just for men story.
Oh.
So Jack's dad
Yeah.
was going grey and he was on the just for men train. And
was he on it a bit too long, like Tom Jones was? Like when it started to, like, you know, Tom Jones.
I know exactly what you mean.
Like Tom Jones, well, like it started to look like pubic hair on his face. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying your husband's father.
No,
it's got pubic hair on his face. I hope they don't listen to
this. No, they definitely. But Jack's got a younger brother, right. like me.
Yeah.
So when Will was like, you know, four, he like shout. They were like going somewhere, and he shouted in like a really busy car park, "My dad is just for men," or like, "My dad dyes his hair," or something like that. And that was just like the last straw. So. Didn't use it anymore.
Oh, sometimes
it made me laugh loads.
See,
I the innocence of kids, because they just don't realise what they're saying is quite upsetting.
yeah. I mean, I don't really have much inner monologue, as you know. Anyway, I try very hard to have an inner monologue, but it just doesn't work. It
doesn't work for some people.
I think I take that from my mother, as it were. But I think that kind of. That proves that we're getting a bit older, you know, and things are kind of progressing onwards. And I can see that face you're pulling at me like, Aaron, excellent segue.
I love it. I love it when you do a good segue. So, yeah, we are getting older.
We are getting old. I mean, that takes us
neatly on to the next thing. So, I am 30.
Oh, shut your face.
I know, as I've mentioned quite a few times on this
I'm
podcast.
Only 28.
I know, you're such a youngster.
Exactly. 8 years ago.
And
that's 36, by the way, because if Frances is listening, she's not great with the numbers. 70-50, come on.
50, yeah. When I was a kid, I used to go to the specialist at the ear, nose and throat.
ENT.
ENT.
As family in the NHS would.
Those in the know.
Yeah.
Would know. I was born with my left.
It feels like you're about to break into a song, can I just say?
I was born. To never sing, because I've got such a shit voice.
That makes two of us then. We've got that in common.
Oh,
as well.
There we go. So I was born with my left ear not fully developed.
Right.
So I've always had rubbish balance. It took me till I was about 10 to be able to ride a bike without stabilisers, which is super embarrassing. It took me a long time to learn how to swim properly, because I'm so much more weighted to like the right.
And surely so, having the water in your ear wouldn't help.
Yeah, it doesn't help. Oh. Like, so I used to go every year to the specialist in Middlesbrough, who then became the MP, which is another story.
But for which?
For Middlesbrough. Ashok Kumar.
No, for which party? Oh,
sorry, for Labour.
Thank you.
I was like, for which?
You're like, clearly Middlesbrough.
Constituency. I was like, yeah, bro. So, bless him. And he, so we used to go every year and have the test, you know, where you do, like, I don't know if you've ever had a hearing test, but they play all these sounds and you click like you're a weather woman.
Yeah,
weather
reporter, years ago.
And you click the thing when you can hear it. And I used to have those every single year. And then I turned 15, 16, and because I was technically like an adult, or I would be technically an adult by the time my next appointment rolled around, I was just discharged.
Ah, because it's not free anymore.
I guess so, or that they just didn't think it was worth transferring me to, like, the adult bit, or I don't know. And they were just like, basically, it's probably not going to get any better. You definitely
won't. Good luck.
Yeah, like, oh, great. You know, you won't be able to get into, like, the police force, or, you know, like.
Oh, those dreams that you had.
Those dreams of mine to be a police officer. And I was just like, okay, fine. But, you know, when you're, like, 15, 16... I'm not going to question it. My mum never questioned it. It's just like, okay, this is what's happening. And then as I've gotten older, I've noticed that, like, my hearing is just absolutely shocking. I've, like, Jack will say something and I will think he's saying something totally weird and wild and, like, doesn't even make sense.
Like earlier on when we were in the members club.
And I don't even know how I have...
What did you think I'd said? So, I can't remember it was.
So earlier on today, you said, "Oh, I really fancy Masaka," and I was like, "No, you're not allowed that." But and you were like, "Yeah, it's fine. It's got aubergine." But I thought you said, "I really want Prosecco." So when you said it's got aubergine, I was like, "What are you talking about?" Which is a real contradiction, because I have since gone to Specsavers and had a hearing test, and I have. Had the hearing test, and I had this, she showed me this graph, so you get to see
Oh no, is this like the fat graph that I have to look at?
Mate.
You are here. You're like, but I'm off the paper. Exactly. The colour has now gone to black. It's not even purple anymore.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's come back round to red.
That is, I mean, so they show you, like, there's like a wave, like a sound wave sort of thing, like a graph of what the things, the sort of pitch and the range of what you can hear.
Yeah.
My right ear is the better of the two, but it's still not great.
Because you'll have been overcompensating because the other, I mean, I'm assuming this is what she said.
Kind of. And then my left one, it was like an inch. So like my right ear, the graph was like flowing. I had like a bit of range.
Wow.
My left ear, it was just like.
Really? So it's just like, no.
It's just ridiculous. And I'd never, you know, Jack and I would listen to like the radio in bed or like podcasts and stuff. And if I turn and I'm sleeping on my right side, I can't hear anything.
Wow.
So it's left like a muffle. So I said to her, what can I do? And she said, well, you can't have surgery. And I was like, I wasn't. That was definitely not where my thinking was.
Yeah. Because cochlear implants are quite obtrusive and you can see them quite clearly.
Yeah.
If it was a flat panel, but they're not a flat panel, it feels like a Bluetooth headset that's attached to the back of your head, doesn't it?
So I've got hearing aids. And
how do you feel about that?
Well, I was a bit sad at first because it's, you know, I'm 30, I'm not 90. And everyone that I've talked to since getting them has been like, oh, my granddad's got those, or oh, my elderly father's got those. You know what I mean?
Well, my father's quite young and he's got one.
Oh, there you go.
And one of the girls at work who sits opposite me has had to have one installed.
Yeah.
And so I think when you sent it to me, I was just like, I'm quite pragmatic about stuff like that. I was just like, it means you can hear.
Yeah, like, I know. I was just like, oh, but it's like I'm, you know, I already wear glasses and I'm going to have hearing aids. Like, great.
And?
But it is fine. And they're so good. I mean, barring the Prosecco Moussaka thing today, I've not had any of those, like, silly moments.
But can you hear, like, things that Jack would say mumbled under his voice that you couldn't hear
so much more. I got them maybe like 3 or 4 weeks ago now, I think. And we got home and I was just walking through the living room into the kitchen and I was like, why am I so loud? Do I normally sound like this? And Jack was like, this is what you sound like, yeah. I'm like, but really, I'm like clodhopping across. And I could just like, I could hear everything and I thought, I need to sort that out. But I think because maybe I couldn't hear, I've thought this is how, like, because my mum used to always tell me off for walking really loudly.
But if you can't hear it, it wouldn't have ever been a thing for you.
Exactly.
What you just said reminded me of when I was dating my long-term boyfriend, who was Italian. When we first met, he didn't speak English very well. So the first time we met, I said all this stuff to him and he kept like smiling and nodding at me. And then after a while, I was like, you've not understood a word I've said, have you? And he just went, no. Right? And then a week after I met him, we moved in together, you know, because I am a stereotypical lesbian. It took a week. So I met him on the Saturday for dinner. He came over on the Wednesday. Grinder, of course. And then he moved in on the Saturday. So the third time I met him, he moved in and we lived together for 4 years. Anyway, so for the first like 3 or 4 months, like all Italians, he would spend his entire time with Italians. He worked with Italians. Our flatmates were Italian. Honestly, sometimes it felt like Little Italy, but I was warned that when you date an Italian, it is like that's living in Little Italy. Now, he didn't understand a lot of things I said, so I could say some disparaging things about him and he would never understand and he'd just be in the background smiling and nodding with
friends. You'd be like, whatever.
Yeah. So one day, he decided to be a vegetarian and he's still a vegetarian to this day. I did all the cooking and I was with my friend and she was like, oh, how is it? Blah, blah, blah. And he was sat behind me and he was in a world of his own as he always is, probably looking on Instagram or looking at RuPaul's Drag Race or something like that. And I went, oh, he's a vegetarian this week. And he went, excuse me. And I was like, oh my God, he speaks English now. He can understand me. So what you just said just kind of
reminds me. It's a bit like that. It is a bit like that. Because he'll, Jack will maybe say something like, and then I'm going to do this, but you know, like, and then I'm going to have whatever I want. Or whatever. I'd be like, no, you're not.
He's like, how dare you?
Yeah. Like, haha, I'm a superpower on it. Yeah. But what makes them even better, it makes me feel a bit more, I don't know, it almost makes me feel a bit more comfortable having them.
I mean, I didn't notice them today.
They're very small.
Until I saw, like, just a tiny bit of wire. Mm-hmm. I thought it was the hair coming down. So I was you've got hair, but it isn't. And it's not that noticeable.
No. So they're like, there's like a little wire, it comes down, sits in my ear, and there's like a little see-through, like, speaker bit thing. And it's like a suction, not like a suction cup, but it sort of looks like that. You know when you get those, like, noise-cancelling earphones, and they've got the little round plasticky bit that goes in your ear?
Yeah.
Rather than like
I have those.
Yeah.
Or those weird old, like, earplugs that you get for the swimming pool.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
But then the wire comes off and then it goes into, like, the proper hearing aid speaker bit, I guess. And then that just sits behind your ear. So at first it was a bit of getting used to.
Yeah.
But they're, like, Bluetooth enabled, which is just mental. So, like,
so
she hooked them up for me in the shop, so to my phone, I can turn them up and down. So if I'm someone speaking really quietly,
like my earbud things, where I can
you can change the volume of them. I can't do anything other than that.
So you can be able to listen to, like, Spotify and stuff with them. And
yeah, I can listen to podcasts with them. Anything that's sort of Bluetooth enabled and, like, so what is weird is so if I get a phone call, it rings in my ears. It doesn't tend to ring, like, loud, unless I've got my sound turned on. So I was at work yesterday and I was chatting away to Sally at work about, you know, the weekend or whatever. And my phone was at my desk and I was stood at her desk, which is like a bank away from mine. And she was chatting away about, you know, this wedding that her and her boyfriend are going to. And I was like, I'm really sorry, Sally, but my phone's ringing. And she was like, how do you know? Because it wasn't ringing loudly, and I wasn't even at my, like, in my hand or anything, so I had to go all the way back around to my desk with, like, the ringtone just going off in my ears.
Which was irritating as hell.
Pretty irritating. I need to figure out how to stop that, because that is, like,
maybe just,
it's a bit much.
Turn off your Bluetooth during the day.
Well, what is good about it is I can listen to podcasts while I'm working, so it just, but I think,
so I have earbuds that are just like that, but they're Bluetooth and wireless. So just charge them up at my desk, and then very similar, except
It's just kind of like that. Wow. So it helps me hear properly. And there's all these different modes and things that I can put it on. So today when we were having a drink, because there was, like, other people's conversations and background music and all that kind of stuff, I can put it on, like, a noise reduction. Like a background noise reduction mode.
So maybe that's why you...
Maybe that's... But I hadn't done that before the Masaka thing.
Masaka gate.
So when I did that, I was like, because I still forget that that's something I can do. And there's, like, one about, like telephone and music on, like, if you're at an event or... You know, like, all these different kind of things.
And if you're in the bank, you can turn it to the T position. And
turn it to T. Don't forget to turn it to T. That's the first thing Jack said to me when I told him I had to have hearing aids was, don't forget to turn it to T. I was like, shut up.
So you can go to Wembley tonight and listen to Jack.
Yeah, listen to what he's doing. The other thing that they can do is, so if I'm at an event, like, I can't remember what it's called, but it's got this thing that you can do where, you know, almost like a dictaphone. So I can set it, like, at the front, if that's allowed. Maybe I'm sitting at the back. And I can hear it perfectly. So it's got this, like a long-range...
Oh, that's clever.
...volume thing. It's amazing.
So it does a lot more than you expected it to do. And it's actually been a benefit.
It's been such a benefit.
So a little bit of vanity gone.
Yeah. I mean, it was clearly vanity.
Yeah.
But I told my mum, and this is just mums all over, I think, or maybe my just my mum all over. She got upset about the fact that I needed hearing aids and felt like it was her fault.
Okay.
And I was like, well, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
Is it? I mean,
it's genetics. I mean, it's just your genes, unfortunately. Yeah. But, you know.
I definitely don't see it like it's anybody's fault.
No. That's very strange.
Yeah, it was really weird. But then...
I mean, when I...
You know.
I'm going to seg again. I'm sorry.
No, please
do. So when I got the gastric band...
Oh, yeah.
I was worried. See, you talk about vanity. I was worried quite a lot that I'm going to get flappy skin.
Yeah, of course.
That's what I've been...
That's a big concern, though, isn't
it? Yeah. Because when I first moved to London, in fact, I've slept with two guys now. One just before I got the band and one when I first moved to London. And I've seen what the flappy skin looks like and it's not ideal. And I don't have that much disposable cash to get everything surgically removed by cosmetic surgery. So, so again, once I got over that thing, I was just like, well, I need to do it. Otherwise I'm going to give myself a heart attack if I carry on the way I am. So, so that's why I did that, as it were.
There's such a difference in you, though.
Do you think?
Yeah, totally.
Like?
I mean, how long have you had it now? 6 weeks?
5 weeks.
Right.
5 weeks, yeah.
I mean,
it's 5 weeks since the operation, and I was doing the thing 3 weeks before that.
Yeah.
So 8 weeks.
8 weeks of the, like, process.
Of the process, yeah. Mm. Since my birthday, when I was rock bottom.
Yeah.
I've lost 4.5 stone.
That's pretty amazing, mate.
I know, right? It's not even optimised yet.
Yeah.
So when it's optimised, it's going to be even better, as it were.
Mm.
But I'm not hungry. That's the weird thing. Like, that's today really I went out good. For lunch and I overdid it. And I get this weird shooting pain up the side where the band is clearly on a nerve. And I know when I've overdone it.
Yeah, because that starts to hurt.
Yeah. But if I eat something I shouldn't, it just goes straight back out.
Mm.
So at the wedding, because I had to deal with certain situations that I didn't really want to deal with. Not
quite equipped for that yet.
Not yet. Not quite yet. That I ate lots of different things and it just popped out straight away. So
maybe this is a really daft question to ask, but is that like you're being sick or is it just like it will go down?
So what happens is, I'm gonna use you as an example because you're opposite me.
Perfect.
So the kind of the top half of your left boob, just underneath where you've got your microphone at the moment, is where the band is.
Right.
So your stomach actually is underneath there, and it comes all the way down here, and it carries 1.5 litres worth of food, as it were. So that's like. Almost a big bottle of Pepsi. So it's like the size of Pepsi that you get when you order a KFC.
Yeah. when you get Domino's.
That's the size. Yeah. So that's the size of your belly. So what happens is they wrap this band around the top of that, and it's now the size of a golf ball.
Okay.
Now, if I don't chew enough, it won't get through the hole.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is if on the first couple of chews I don't eat right, it stops above the band and it goes, ha ha ha, nice try. And then pops back out. So it comes straight back out.
Right.
So, and I know this is going to be gross. And I apologize if you're eating, maybe don't eat while you are listening to this podcast. It's not digested. So there's no acid. It's not been in your stomach.
Right.
So it's not been through your bowel duct or anything like that. So it comes straight back out the way it went in.
Right. Okay.
So, like the other day when I had a carver with my sister and I had some gammon, like a mouthful of gammon with some mint sauce, it tasted just as nice coming out. did the mint sauce as it did going in.
That's so
And I know
bad,
that's really
it?
Disgusting. But when it's coming out and I'm like, actually, that tastes just as nice.
Yeah. I feel
like a hamster. It's like a hamster pouch.
Yeah.
Like, and then I'm just kind of throwing it up into my little corner, as it were. And I know that's quite gross, but it's gonna take a lot of adjusting, getting used to that, as it were.
Working out what you can and can't have.
Yeah. So I can't have ham. I can't have gammon now, obviously. No more carveries. So
I mean,
I spent
that's
a fortune on that carvery and I couldn't eat any of it.
No. Especially the yolk. Can I just say,
I mean, they're a bit overrated, and it's just gluttony. That's all it is. It's just greed.
And roast dinners in general. I'm just not a big fan.
I like roast potatoes, but I'm not really...
No.
I'd prefer some dim sum or something like that.
Oh, yes, please.
Yes. I can't eat dry chicken. I can't eat...
Nobody wants to eat dry chicken.
English breakfast. Can't eat English breakfast. So at the hotel, each morning, that came straight back up. And he had breads, pizza... Pizza came back up, the bread that I had at the end of the meal that I went for Italian, that, you know, so there's quite a lot of things that I can't eat, and I don't want to stretch it, and I don't want to create, because you can create a pouch that will block it and can actually mean that you need to go to hospital and get it, like, removed. So it's just getting used to it and being able to work with it, as it were. But I was walking across the car park to work yesterday morning, because I did a late shift on Thursday, so I went in a little bit later, and I had this like white shirt on, the one I'm wearing today, and I had these trousers on because I'm wearing trousers again now, and some shoes instead of my trainers.
I just noticed like that. That you were wearing chinos. Thank you.
Look a bit, I know, right? Hello? I've turned into a full-on middle-aged man.
Turned into a guardian dad.
I
With hashtag, the granddad collar.
Hashtag dad for lad. but I am with the granddad collar. Thanks for that. It really does though. And as I got to work, there were, all of the HR team that I work in were all like, we were all stood by the window watching you because you look so slim walking across the car park. And they were like, have you checked your phone? And I opened my phone. And one by one, they'd all been saying to me, we were looking great.
Oh, strutting across lovely. The car park.
Do you know what? It was really, really nice.
That's super nice.
That was nice to come to work to yesterday.
Yeah. You'd be well chuffed because the difference, and just in your like outlook, let alone your like physical appearance, is so different.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm so sorry.
Well, that's perfect for me. That leads us on to what did I learn this month, which is absolutely perfect. We don't need a seg in that edit. No, that's absolutely perfect.
Just do a massive sneeze.
That works for me.
It's been brewing for a little while, and I was really trying to not let it out.
The little sniff thing that you do. Yeah, just rubbing the nose and giving it a... Yeah, absolutely. So as you were clearly bored of my story, which is what that sneeze was. I know, I'm joking. What have you learned this month?
Well, I've learned a few bits. So, I went to this exhibition last weekend at the V&A, which was called Food Bigger Than the Plate.
Or as I would call it, Erin. Your eyes are bigger than your belly, not anymore.
All about you. A full exhibition. It was really cool, actually. It showed the sort of life cycle of the food industry as much as it could in a exhibition.
Yeah, yeah.
From, you know, the composting, from, you know, all the way through to like farming, food growth and food trading, and how food gets from, you know, you grow your potatoes in one country and how you get it to the next, you know, like all that kind of like shipping and
we're going to disrupt all that with Brexit as well, because a lot of our food comes from Spain.
Yeah. There was a load of stuff about, you know, we all, there's a sort of, I don't know, it's about a minute and a half, 2 minutes film of like showing like food getting prepped and stuff. And none of it was here. You know, it was really interesting. And this is not the thing that I learned, but there was this wallpaper. Do you remember on Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
They're like the lickable wallpaper.
Yeah. It looked exactly like that.
Did you try it?
I was like,
excuse me, madam, this isn't Eureka, the Children's Museum in Halifax.
Get out. But it was really cool. There was the bit that I liked the most was the sort of the bit about like food and food culture.
Yeah.
Which is probably more up my street, but the whole thing was incredible and I'd really recommend going. Tickets were only about $17.50.
Yeah, I don't think it's too expensive in the V&A. I was thinking about getting a membership so you can... They've got, like, a space where you can sit there and stuff.
Yeah, like a membership area and stuff. I was thinking about that as well.
I think what helps living in London is that you get to taste food that you will never taste anywhere else in the country. So, like, today we met my friend from Venezuela. I went to a South American and Latin food festival in Borough 4 or 5 months ago, and I got to taste, I'm going to mispronounce this, I apologise, arepas.
Oh yeah.
Which are Venezuelan, it's like it's kind of like a pasty.
Mm.
But, oh my gosh, you would absolutely love
Sounds
that.
Sounds great.
And we had like Brazilian churros and the food was just amazing. But I got to taste Venezuelan food for the first
time.
Yeah,
yeah. Like where else are you going to get that chance?
Exactly.
So it was really cool. And you go through and there's like, you know, all these cookbooks and stuff. There's like Julia Child. There's like Jack Monroe. There's Otto Engi. There's, you know, Hester Blumenthal and all this like crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And they had these really sweet little audio documentary things that you could listen to. Just put this like little thing, like a little camera.
You connected it to you.
Yeah, connected to my hearing aid. And it was like these families from, you know, like different cultures, different backgrounds talking about like keeping recipes alive. So like...
What did you say? Was it a monk? Was it some monks the other day?
Oh, in like, was it Belgium?
That found like a 700-year-old
yeah, like beer recipe
for beer. Yeah,
I saw that. I love that. And they've like made it, haven't they? It was, you know, kind of like that, like making sure that they kept family recipes alive. But
there's a really interesting... I'm sorry, I know I keep interrupting. I'm sorry for this. There's a really interesting video on... I think it might be Vox on YouTube. And it shows this, like, last guy in Japan who makes... what's Japanese horseradish called?
Wasabi.
Wasabi. And he farms wasabi and he makes wasabi the traditional way and he's like the last person to do it.
That's cool.
And it's absolutely amazing. Mm. But that kind of
thing. Yeah, that's it.
Sorry, you were...
I think it was an Italian family. Oh, my memory's shocking. But there was a family and the person who was like the main interviewee, I suppose, was saying that like, you know, his grandmother... makes this dish and she gave them the recipe but it was just like, you know, pasta, chicken, you know, like just the rest of the ingredients but it was never how much or, you know, it was like you just know how much and like a pinch of salt but like how much is a pinch or like half a packet of pasta but how big's your pasta, you know, like all these things and it's like we don't want this recipe to die because as a family we love it so much but when she's not around my mum and I are trying to figure out how we make it just as good as hers, but we want to be authentic. We want to keep it, you know, to what she did. And how are we going to do that? You know, because she can't tell you a specific measurement. And part of it isn't the specific measurement. It's like the love and the like feelings and stuff that you associate with this food. I thought it was really lovely. And there was a couple of like YouTube clips of like food bloggers and stuff. And they were really fun and, it talked about Instagram and how, like, that's been a really big thing for food.
Yeah. I mean, I watched so many food videos on Instagram.
I love food videos. Food programs, all of it. And the thing that I was going to tell you was they had this, like, three little fridges and they had cheese in them. But when you look closer, they were made fermented, I guess, or the bacteria that, like, started them was from people. So it was like people... So it had...
I'm sorry, all I can think when you say that, and we can't edit this out, is knob cheese. I'm really sorry.
Well, that's close on one of them. So it's famous people. Don't be.
Fermented human knob cheese.
It's sorry. To a camembert.
Oh, I think it'd be more blue cheese than that.
Yeah, well, that's it. So they had Gorgonzola. So they had a had Alex Jameson Blair, who's a cheese dairy farmer.
Okay.
They had Ruby Tando, who was on Bake Off, Hester Blumenthal, a couple of other people, and it was their armpit, like sweat bacteria, someone's pubes.
Oh, so
yeah.
Oh, right.
So and like nose and you know like all these sort of weird body parts where you get like certain bacteria from, they put together to make this cheese.
And were people eating it?
No. It was just in a fridge and it just explained.
Wow.
I know, isn't that mad? And then the other thing that I learned was that there's a bloke who makes black pudding, but he doesn't kill the pig. He just takes blood out of the pig.
Oh, right, okay. With like an injection.
Yeah.
Like. Oh, and that's, I was like, that seems more humane.
That's all odd possible. Though, isn't it? I was like, how is that any better?
Well, I suppose it's like just taking blood out of an animal.
Like a blood sample.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh.
I mean,
isn't it? It really made me think.
Yeah.
Because, like, is it necessary to have?
I mean,
done that.
I'm gonna say this to you now, and I never, in my wildest dreams, thought I would ever say this
as a sentence or to me
ever, ever. So one of the girls at work, I'm gonna wait until you drink that. One of the girls at work made a comment the other day saying that, because this hurts such a tiny amount, it's an insignificant comment that you've made. Like, but she used an analogy.
Mm.
And the analogy is actually perfect for what you've just said. And she said to me, a pinprick on a pig's ass. And I never thought in a million years I would ever have to say that.
No, I never thought you'd have to repeat that.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
And so, we've been mocking her for it all week at work.
Well...
And it's just gone full circle.
It's gone full circle,
I'm not suggesting she listens, because she will rub that in my face. But that literally is a pinprick on a pig's ass.
Yeah, it literally is.
Because it doesn't hurt. Wow.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Fascinating?
Yeah.
So there you go. That's what I've learned. What have you learned?
I've learned the hard way, which is why I didn't go into too much detail, that I can no longer eat my feelings. Because you're trying to figure out what I'd written down there.
Yeah, I was like, eating I...
Eating F. That's an F. There's a tick off there. What I tended to do up until the band was I never had a full, and whenever anything bad happened, I would eat my feelings, which is how when I broke up with my previous boyfriend, I put on 4 or 5 stone, which is what I've lost now. No, 3 stone. It wasn't as I wasn't this slim then. Anyway, and because of that, I was being super oversensitive at work, and my boss was like, "You, whatever is going on, you need to deal with it, because people are asking you things, and you're like being pathetic about it," which is absolutely fair justification, because I was like, "I am aware of this, I just don't know how I'm controlling it." So because of that, I've then had to deal with a lot of things that I've not dealt with before. So when we did go to the wedding, my best friend came with me, and because I knew I'd had to deal with my mother and she was going to be ignoring me. And, you know, that is quite a big thing to have to deal with when...
Especially when you're in the same room.
When the one receiving it for what I believe is no reason, you know, the two sides for every story and all. But, and she said to me the other day, she said, I didn't notice how much you eat your feelings when something is going wrong until I saw you try and eat this food at the weekend and it kept coming out and you kept throwing it up. She was like, so it feels like this is the right thing that you've done for yourself. And because of that, I then decided, actually, I need to deal with these emotions that I'm not dealing with anymore.
That's it, because the band, while is a good fix for like physical health, also plays a part in your mental health, mental well-being, doesn't it? So if you're removing the crutch for your mental well-being, then you have to face up to the emotions and everything else
that's absolutely
bubbling under the surface.
Yeah. So from a good recommendation,
I do what I can.
Yes. Well, I didn't want to outright say it was from you.
Okay. I'm upfront. Therapy is the best thing I've ever done.
I started going to therapy this week, thankfully. It seems a lot of the things, steps and, you know, all the rest of the stuff that I've been doing seems to be the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this month, and this can sound very self-indulgent, the thing I learned this month was a lot more about myself. I learned that I got the band deliberately to have a full, but on a subconscious level, I obviously was doing it so that I wasn't eating my feelings anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And then you'd have to face up to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a moment you hit, I think, as someone who's had quite a lot of therapy, that you're like, I have to deal with this now.
Yeah.
I'm at the point now where actually I need to do something about it. And I went to see the therapist that I was going to sort of in the run-up to my wedding, because I thought that was the right thing.
Because I remember, yeah, yeah.
And then I stopped a bit before the wedding. And in hindsight, I don't think I was actually ready at that point.
To stop?
To really, like, open up.
Oh, right, okay.
And we were talking, but it was always about things that I'd have to, you know, I've said a million times before about my family and my life and me and whatever, you know, whatever. And then two or three months after the wedding, I was like, no, I think I've got to go back now. And it was like, maybe I just needed to get the wedding out of the way to sort of, because that's a big stressful event. And I thought in my like active, this is a fixable thing mind, I should go before the wedding so that I'm not being in my head during my wedding when I want to enjoy it and have a lovely day and be the centre of attention and blah, blah, blah. But I think...
actually, which you were, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, I did have a lovely day. But I think if we got married again now, after I've been in therapy for about, I don't know, a year and a half or something, it would be a totally different day because I wouldn't be, like, pandering to other people's whims and stuff as readily as I did before. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You learn so much more about yourself, and then 6 months, a year down the line, something will happen and you think, bloody hell, that's exactly how I would have reacted a year ago. Like, so, example, when you popped to our house a couple of weeks ago, last week, you saw we decorated our living room, and mum and her husband came to help us put some shelves up, put the curtain rails up, and this big mirror that we've got. And my mum's got a little dog, and I said, if you don't mind not bringing him to Leeds, because the cat's just going to hate it.
Yeah.
And we haven't had him that long, and I don't want to... Anyway, so she didn't. My nan and her granddad looked after him. And then it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and my mum got a call from my brother saying, granddad's absolutely exhausted. He can't, you know, he's fast asleep on the sofa. He's not going to be able to bring the dog back round. So would you mind picking him up when you come back? And my mum, instead of just going, yeah, absolutely fine, you know, we're back in a couple of hours, was like, right, well, I've got to get someone to get the dog then. You know, that instant, like, panic mode for no reason.
Yeah.
Flapping all over the place, ringing neighbours to see if they're going to pick the dog up. You know, this whole thing that just didn't need to be a thing.
But I think from her experience, she knows what that means.
Yeah, but it didn't mean that.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, but I think you know though, don't you? You know when you know. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get that myself. Like, you know, my sister regularly calls me and she's like, oh, you know, I've got to do this thing for this person, that thing for that person. Mm. It's like, you don't though. You actually don't.
Yeah.
You know, so when I go there, I try deliberately not to be like, can you drop me off here? Can you drop me off there? Because I know that, you know, and I've stopped years ago. I stopped asking her to cut my hair.
Hmm.
You know, I like the way she cuts my hair. She does it really well.
Hmm.
But I know the anxiety and the stress that it causes her when she's worked all day to then,
come home and then
have to do my hair, when I can just be like, do you know what? I'll just go and do this down the road instead.
Well, that's it. But the thing is, though, it wasn't even that my granddad was so exhausted that he couldn't bring the dog over.
Yeah.
You know, it was that my granddad wanted to see my mum.
Yeah.
You know, but she didn't need to flap about so much.
But likewise, and I was like, likewise, and this is the same thing with my family is, why couldn't she just say,
yeah,
do you want to pop over? I want to see you. Do you fancy a coffee?
Yeah. They can't do that. It's like...
Yeah, and it's just, it's exactly the same.
I just think it's mad.
It is, but I don't know what it is, because, in many ways, I feel really, really sorry for my mum, that she's trapped in this mindset of not being able to apologise and always being other people, because she can't accept, actually, maybe I do have a few flaws. Maybe there's a few issues that I need to deal with.
Yeah.
And until she gets to that point, she might never get to that point. You know, so I sound like my therapist now. But
what can you do about it?
But I can't do anything about it. Exactly. I just need to be able to say, right, actually, your behaviour doesn't make me feel very good. And I don't like the way you treat me as a child.
Mm.
And even as the respect as another human being,
that's it.
You know, you shouldn't be doing what you're doing. And if it's because you can't deal with the fact that I'm gay, you need to get over that.
Mm.
Because I had to.
Yeah.
years ago.
Arguably, it's affecting you more, you know, to have to deal with something like that.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, the idea that your parents have for you is never what your life actually ends up being, is it? And from my perspective, I suppose, just, I don't know, learning a bit of humility for me has been a good part of the last, like, 2 months. Mm. Like, you know, I can see my sister's life getting better now. She's moving out of the flat. They're saving up. They're going to buy their own house in a few years' time, I think. You know, I can see them. I can see an end point for their life. And it's been really hard to see her just like floating through existence from one bad situation to another. Mm. None of it her fault, but just trying desperately to improve the situation, not being able to. And now it feels like she's got a bit of clarity. And I feel the same, like, I've got my moment of clarity now. Like, I feel like I've been... The way I described this year, between January and March, the first 3 months of the year, felt like I was walking through a wood in a cloud of smoke, and I kept tripping over moss and twigs and walking into trees and stuff. And I feel like now that this band has been put there, like, all that fog and all those emotions that I've been hiding are all starting to disappear, and I can actually see, I can see the valley, and I can see the river.
See the wood for the trees.
I can, and I suppose that's why that expression is a thing. Mm. I can see the wood for the trees because all this smoke is now disappearing.
Yeah.
But I'm having to deal with, you know, this rotten tree over here. You know, and this pile of horse shit over there, and you know, dead cow. And do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's kind of things that I'm going to have to deal with on the way. And like you say, I think this therapy is going to help with all that.
Absolutely.
And I know I'm using all these metaphors, which is very unusual for me because I don't really use metaphors. But
I think that's part of figuring it all out, though.
Yeah. I think whenever, you know, people always say, like, meditating and mindfulness. I can't meditate, but I do have mindful moments.
Mm.
And my happy mindful place is Malam Cove.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, whenever I think of a happy, nice place, that's probably Malam Cove. And I think that's probably because the day before I moved to London, I went there with my dad and my sister. I made a really, really nice day. Mm-hmm. And it was like unusual for us to
have such a nice time together.
To have such a nice time together, because there's always my mum in the background trying to...
Yeah, meddle and stuff.
Well, it's trying to put people in their stereotypes. Like, she puts my brother as the hot-headed one and my sister as the weak one that she picks on, and me as the angry one that annoys and upsets everybody because I'm being inappropriate and, you know, and have no feelings and all the rest of it. But I feel like now I'm starting to know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said in the last pod, there are a lot of things I don't like, but equally there are more things I do like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to stop... acting like a bit of a knobhead sometimes.
That's a lesson for everybody.
Yeah, I don't need to be as, you know, my manager described me as a very difficult man, and Jonathan, our old station manager, described me as prickly. And, you know, I'd like to not be known as, you know, like, you hear about all these successful people, but they're always like, oh, they're really hard to work with. And I don't want to be... He's successful, but he's a knobhead. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a polite way of saying good luck working with him. And I don't want that.
No, because that's your reputation, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, you know, you might find some things out along the way that you maybe don't like about yourself, or that you weren't expecting to find out about yourself in that way, or, you know, what you weren't expecting to hear.
Yeah.
Nyasha, my therapist, once told me to stop bullshitting myself. And I was like, but I don't think I do that. And she was like, come on. What have you just, you know, like, she'll just say to me, what have you just said? And I'll be like, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, can you not see the, what you're doing to you? You're like, and I'm, you know, she would not be afraid to like pull me up and tell
me
off.
That's good.
And I think that's what I needed.
I think, yeah. And I had a very similar thing with my therapy the other day. You know, I say to my sister all the time, you're being too hard on yourself. You're being successful and blah, 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 blah. And I was sat with my therapist, Dan, and having this Skype call, because we do it because I'm so busy. I don't have time to sit in an office for somebody. She said, so what are you going to do this weekend? And I said, well, I'm going to try and go to the gym, and I want to start going every day, and then I'm going to meet my friend, and I'm going to do this, blah, blah, blah. And she said, right. She said, with the gym, just try and go once a week. Hmm. She was like, don't give yourself too much. I've forgotten what she'd said to me now, and I said it to you earlier, but she was like, don't put too much pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
If you don't do it, you don't do it. If you do it once, you do it once. She's like, you need to not put all that pressure on yourself that you're putting on yourself all the time, because then you're going to react off the back of that, and then you're going to feel like a failure. And I was like, fine. Fine, Anne, whatever.
You're like, God damn it, you're so right.
Damn it, Anne, damn it. Yeah.
You just know, don't you? Like, you've just hit the nail right on the head.
Damn it, woman, all right.
And I found, don't know if this happens to you, but days later, I'll be like, oh, that's what she meant.
Yeah.
You know, like subconscious.
I do that with everyone, though.
Ticking around.
I do, with everyone, I'm like, you know, when somebody says something to me and then a few days later, I'm like, oh, that's what they meant.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really good at reading what people are saying. I'm not really good at reading between the lines. I'm very straightforward that way. And I think that's maybe and I would say a northern thing, but I think it really is like a cultural thing from the north that people are just very straightforward.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're pissing me off, you're pissing me off, and I'll tell you.
You'll know.
Down here, people are like, oh, he's got a very unique way of talking, hasn't he? And I'm like, what does that mean? Like,
that means,
am I a dickhead, or I actually get stuff done, or do you know what I mean?
So
it's very ambiguous sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, as usual, if you want to find me on my fat account, I use the word that I shouldn't be using on a pod then. it's at previously fat, or at Aaron Trains if you want to catch me on my normal account, as it were. And yours is?
It's Little Leeds Kitchen.
Yeah.
You can catch us on Fancy Brew Pod.
Excellent, well done.
On all the bits and pieces, except for Facebook. I don't think we have one of those.
No.
And you can also email us fancyabrewpod@gmail.com. Thanks very much for listening.
Thank you.
We will see you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.